Support for Church Folks comes from Tie Travels, more than just your average travel site. With three levels to save, you have the opportunity to build great and multiple incentives, earning yourself points to be used however you please. Not only that, you are also building points to reward deserving kids a chance to explore the world, showing them much more than they see every day. Also for the month of July, if you're interested in becoming an agent yourself, you will receive a $500 cruise voucher, offer good through July 31st. So before you book that getaway, contact Talisha Ross at www.myvortex365.com/tietravels. Again, that's www.myvortex365.com/TYTravels, or hit her up on Facebook at TYTravels, exploring the world for less.
First, giving honor to God, pastor, saints, and friends, this is Church Folks. All right, welcome to Church Folks, and we have been talking about this for a long time, and we're excited to bring you episode one. My name is Derek J. Murphy, and I am a pastor, teacher, writer, motivational speaker, worship leader, your all-around Renaissance man, and I'm joined here with my co-host, Whit.
Whit Rose, just a girl from around the way.
And we are excited to be here with you. We hope that this is an encouraging show, an entertaining show, and we're about having a good time. There's no stuffiness involved in what we're doing on this show. We want you to enjoy the Lord and enjoy each other, and most of all, enjoy us, because, I mean, that means you'll come back and listen again. Originally, I wanted to call this show I Can't Stand Church Folks, but I was told that that doesn't really go with my brand and building people. So I was told I might need to square that down and change that up a little bit and call it Church Folks. And so what we're really doing is talking to people who are pursuing their ministries and passions and gifts outside of the church walls. In fact, I think we only have only a couple of preachers that we're going to talk to on our guest list. And so I asked my cousin to be a part of this, and she's been excited about it. What do you think about what we're doing with this show?
I think this show is a catalyst for people to, a catalyst to bridge the gap between the church and, as we stated on the previous show, the other people. I think that it's an open door for those that are not quite, you know, comfortable with their gifts inside the church walls. They can come on and express themselves in a different way and still reach the people in the community the same.
Now, how did you feel when I asked you to be a part of this?
I was very excited. Any opportunity I have to talk, you know, I'm excited. And I'm also excited to be a part of something that's building your brand, you know, and also, you know, just pouring back out into the community and trying to reach everybody.
Well, neither one of us are really comedians, but I think I'm pretty funny, and I think you're pretty funny, too.
I think I'm pretty funny, too. I laugh at my jokes.
I laugh at my jokes, too, and surely out of all the people that's going to be listening all over the country, surely somebody's going to laugh at our jokes.
I agree.
Shout out to those who are listening on KEBNradio.com. We want to thank Fia Shelton Kennedy for the opportunity to air us on your station. Also, those who may be listening from Freedom Radio, from the Stockton area, from the Northern California area, we want to thank Demetrius Tollfree for the great opportunity to be aired on your station. And I hope that everyone that gets in contact with this show is really built up, really encouraged to do whatever it is that God has called you to do in whatever area that is. So before we get to our first interview, let's take a minute and pay a few bills and listen to our sponsors. This episode of Church Folks is supported by my latest book, Rewriting Murphy's Law. In a world where bad news is ever present and we're tempted to lean into that negativity, Rewriting Murphy's Law will help you rewrite your own narrative, because everything doesn't have to go wrong. In this collection of essays, I take you through six topics, including emotions, questions, and destiny, to help you see God's goodness in your own story. It's an easy read, and I'm sure that it'll bless you. So order your copy today anywhere you buy books online, or visit DerekJMurphy.com/books. Again, that's DerekJMurphy.com/books. Inspiration, motivation, encouragement, building people.
If you have a business, brand, ministry, product, or event that you would like promoted on this show, contact us at churchfolksshow@gmail.com. Again, that's churchfolksshow@gmail.com. We have on-air and digital packages available, and rates are extremely low for this first season. So take advantage of that and contact us today.
All right, our first interview for this episode one is your new favorite comedian, Derek Keener. He is from our hometown of Texarkana. And if you don't know where Texarkana is, look at the most northeast corner of Texas and the most southwest corner of Arkansas, and you'll find us here. Whit and I are both born and raised here in this city. And so is our guest today, Derek Keener. The conversation that we had with him was very enlightening, very encouraging, and I think there's a lot that you can get out of it. What do you think?
I agree. I think that Derek gave us a pretty good perspective of Derek Keener on and off the stage.
We joined Derek and his son Caleb in his offices, so if you hear a little bit of noise in the background, there's some other stuff going on, but I think you'll really enjoy what Derek has to say. Family, when we were considering doing this podcast over a year ago, the first name to come to my mind without question to talk to was our guest today. He is my brother, my friend, my classmate, and if you don't know him, he will be your favorite comedian by the time we get done with this interview. Yes, sir.
Save that.
Everybody's new favorite comedian, Derek Keener. Thank you for coming on to the show.
Thank you for having me, man.
I appreciate you being with us, man. And the first question I want to ask is the question that we're going to ask everybody.
Okay.
What church song, worship song sends you in every time you hear it?
Well, I can't give you a song that sends me in. But what I can say is that most songs by Bishop Hezekiah Walker take me up out of him.
So Bishop Hez is your
Bishop
go-to?
Hez, that's my go-to guy. Now, if any song where we talking about Jesus, that gets me too.
Okay.
So just as long as you say Jesus' name, you probably got me in your song. That's pretty much where I'm at.
Well, then you might be hard-pressed with some of the songs that we got coming out today because they don't say Jesus a whole lot. But
well, that's you know, I like up-tempo worship songs, but most of the songs that just, they hung him high. Right. They stretched him wide. Right. You know, I love that song. I love any song that's got to do with Jesus.
All right, you are Derek Keener, and we did already say that you are a comedian. So how did you come to that place to decide that you wanted to pursue this as a career?
It was in college. Now, it started out in middle school where I got funny. Tim Strickland. I'm calling out these names.
That's
Tim
fine.
Strickland, we were playing. We were on the basketball team together. And boy, they dogged me. Hey, man, they dogged me so bad that day with joking on me that I went home and cried. I said, never again. The next day, we went on a basketball trip down to Magnolia. We had to play against Magnolia. And I was in the eighth grade. And that night, I did not let up on anybody. If a fight came with it,
a fight came with it.
Hey, but there was not a single person that was safe. Our coach tried to calm me down. I got on him. Nobody was safe. Coach Forte, I love him to this day. I had him
Tracy
in the front.
Forte.
Tracy Forte. That's my guy. He made us all think we were Omegas. Back when I was in the eighth grade, man, he had a heart. I mean, I was just stomping like I'd been pledged because of Coach Tracy Forte. And I talked about everybody on that bus. And the next day at school, it was the talk of the school. Don't mess with Derek. He crazy.
Right.
Don't mess with Derek. And so that birthed something in me. Now, did I know I was trying to be a comedian? Absolutely not. I just knew that I was funny. Mm-hmm. So when I got to school at Prairie View University, in 1998, well, let's just take it right here. When I came to Texas High,
right,
in 1997, because I spent all my school years in Arkansas, I got kicked off the football team, and then I just thrust myself in the theater. That was my second love. So Sports first, theater second. My the principal, I can't remember her name, black lady, tall black lady.
I don't remember.
She said, they need to see you. And she said, there's a guy at Prairie View, he's giving away scholarships. And we did the UIL one act play. And C. Lee Turner was judging the play. I made the all-star cast based off of him judging. He offered me a scholarship to come to Prairie View. When I got there, there's this thing called New Faces. So for New Faces, that's your introduction to the campus that they do every single semester. Now, New Faces is a play with upperclassmen. Mm-hmm. Surrounded around that play are the talents of the New Faces.
Okay.
Okay, on campus. So all the freshmen.
It's like a supporting class.
That's right.
Okay.
But we don't get to be in the play.
Right.
We have to do stuff around the play. Like, the play is written, but Whitley can sing. So mm-hmm. she's going to sing a song at a certain point. You dance, so you're going to dance at a certain point. I tell jokes, so C. Lee Turner told me I was trying to find a monologue to do.
Right.
C. Lee Turner said, no, Derek Kennedy, you're a comedian. You're going to do comedy. That's what you're going to do. And I had no clue how to write a joke. I don't know this. He said, you're funny. Come out. I want you to tell me a joke. Tell me a joke. So we're in his office, and I'll never forget. Whatever it was I said that day,
right.
It wasn't funny. And he looked at me and said, That's not funny, Derek. And I said, well, you the one saying come in and tell you a joke. I didn't tell you I wanted to tell jokes.
Right.
And he told me, he said, now, Derek King, if you don't come up with some jokes, you're not going to be in New Faces. Bro, I was hurt.
Bro.
I'm a freshman.
Right.
That's the only way to get in this thing. Well, he had been there for almost 30 years. Mm-hmm. Never had used a freshman inside of the play. He came to me 48 hours prior to the play starting mm-hmm. and was like, Derek Keener, you're in the play.
Now
I'm in the actual play, not the New Faces. I'm in the play. It's first freshman.
Right.
Me and Ronnie, Ronnie Bell, I think that was his name. Ronnie Bell, Ronnie Davis, something like that.
I thought you were talking about Slick from Bell DeVoe.
No, this guy right here he was like the black Jim Carrey to me back then.
Okay.
Oh my God, this guy was really good. So Mr. Turner told me, he said, well, Mr. Keener, you're going to have to tell your jokes now in front of your classmates. I got 2 days. Tell your jokes in front of your classmates, and that's going to determine whether or not you're going to be in here or not. I'm nervous. I remember I was upstairs waiting to find out when it was my turn to go. I had just read George Carlin's Brain Droppings. Mm-hmm. I'd went and got Chris Rock's Bigger and Blacker, mm-hmm. and I studied those. So Brain Droppings was a book by George Carlin, one of the greatest comedians ever. And then Chris Rock's Bigger and Blacker CD, I listened to it every night along with Lauryn Hill, The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill. Mm-hmm. This is how I went to sleep at night in college.
Right.
Well, I came downstairs, and the upperclassmen had told me, Mr. Turner, don't laugh at nobody, man. So you're gonna have your work cut out for you. I had no clue what I was going to say, which is when I realized I was really good under pressure.
Mm-hmm.
Because C. Lee Turner fell out of his chair laughing at me.
All right.
The upperclassman said, dog, you got it.
Yeah.
You got it. Like, how did you got it? And so I had to learn a two-act play in 48 hours and come up with a routine to do in front of the entire school. And we ran that for 3 days.
Wow.
Yeah, so that was the birth of a comedian. Mr. Turner told me I was going to be a comedian. And freshman year, they voted me at PV, most likely to succeed.
Wow.
It was awesome.
Wow.
It was awesome.
Well, see, I remember you in high school.
Yeah.
And that's what I remember was you being funny.
Yeah.
At lunch, because we didn't have any classes together.
Right.
But you were just cracking jokes, just being you at the lunch table. So yeah. when I heard that you were pursuing a comedy career, that was no surprise at all. But
I didn't know.
You know, me being the type of person that I am, I'm always supporting people that are pursuing their dreams mm-hmm. or pursuing something different.
Yeah.
But I kind of, you know, my limited thinking was like, comedy from Texas? I can't name a famous comic from Texas that's doing things on a bigger scale.
Yeah.
But you're doing it big, man, and we're proud of you from here.
Well, thank you. I never thought about what it took to be a comedian. I just knew Mr. Turner told me that's what I could be.
Mm-hmm.
I there was no thought to you can make money, I just wanted to love life. I had nothing that said become Steve Harvey, become this person. I did it because Mr. Turner said I could do it. That's really why I did it. I wanted to be a funny actor.
Right.
I did want to be a funny actor. I thought maybe I could act like Jamie Foxx, you know what I mean, and just do these characters. Because I was really good at, you know, voices and stuff like that.
Right.
I had no clue that I would be a comedian. And a pretty good one.
Yes.
I didn't know that. So I had no expectations, but also didn't have any limitations. I just went and did it. I just went and did it.
That's good. Coming up as the son of a preacher, mm-hmm. you and I both share that mm-hmm. Together. Mm-hmm. My preacher pastor father is a Kojic preacher pastor.
Yeah, yeah.
Your preacher pastor father is a Baptist and a show enough good Baptist preacher.
you're right.
And I know, you know, there are some differences in probably the way that we came up. Mine was probably a tad more strict than yours. Mm-hmm. You think so?
I would say not totally. Maybe. See, my father grew up Kojic too.
Right.
So he wasn't super strict on us based on his upbringing.
Right.
But to the rest of my cousins, we had it rough.
Right.
Yeah, the rest of my cousins, we definitely had it rough. I remember one time there was a dance, and you remember Shoney's?
Yeah.
Man, we kicked it at Shoney's all night. My daddy had told me, hey, now you still got to get up and go to church in the morning. I was like, all right, yeah, I hear you. I'm going to go kick it at Shoney's with everybody else after the dance. Probably didn't get home at 2 o'clock in the morning. I'm kicking it.
Right.
Got to go to Sunday school. Got to be in church. This is before he built the new church over there. And I'll never forget, I was in the back of the church with Square Watson. Square went to church with me.
Yeah.
And, man, I'm talking my head on a string, trying to keep it together. I'll never forget, my father was standing in the pulpit, and he got ready to read his Bible verse. He said, Derek, if you would stay with us for a little while. And I went, ooh, that ain't Joker. But I stayed woke, man. So he wasn't strict, but he played that, you know, go to sleep at church stuff either. So it wasn't like you can't go to dances or anything like that, or you got to read. But we had to read our Bible every morning before we went to school.
Oh, wow.
Me and my brothers, absolutely. We had to at least read 5 verses out of the gospel.
Okay.
Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. We had to do every single morning.
Did y'all pray together as a family in the morning?
Absolutely,
That was what we did. We didn't have to read out the Bible because I guess we did that enough every night at church.
Yeah. Let me tell you something. That man...
Church Monday through Sunday through Monday.
There you go.
We didn't do the Sunday through Monday, but we were... Bible study would sometimes just be me, my father, my brothers.
Right.
People at the church didn't even come. It was just us. And he taught us.
Right.
You know, so that word is in me, but he made us read that Bible every morning. We could have just fought. But I bet you we had to have something to tell that man that we read out that Bible.
Right. Well, how much of that pastor's child, preacher's child, upbringing, mm-hmm. how much of that do you think plays into your ability to work a crowd? Because I've seen you in action.
Hmm.
And I think that your ability to work a crowd is just as strong as your father as a preacher. Hmm. How much of that do you feel like really brought you into that?
I'm not sure. You know, I've never really thought about it. But what I can say is this. I'll say this. My father is the type of person, and he might not even want me to say this, but I don't have to say it. He's the type of person that when, if you put him on the bill mm-hmm. to preach with several other preachers, and you put him up first, you better make sure.
Yes, sir, Doc.
You better make sure that whoever you put to go up behind him can go get it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So now I take that same thing when I do comedy, which is why they've moved me from opening to closer to the end of the show.
Right.
Now, my name doesn't carry as much weight as your DC Currys or your Earthquake or your Steve. It doesn't carry. But the jokes carry that much weight, if not more. So I get that from him, but the ability to work a crowd, I've never really thought about working the crowd. I've always thought about just being prepared for what I do based on how he's prepared for what he does. I try to be good at it. Even if I'm not trying to just like on Sundays, he's not looking for the amens. He's really trying to give you all of what's in him. And that's what I'm trying to do. When I'm on this stage, I want to give you all of what's in me. And if I left it all out there, it ought to be good enough.
Wow. Well, you'd be surprised how much you learn just by watching. And, you know, I followed in my father's footsteps as a preacher, mm-hmm. never really wanting to. Mm. And I really felt like it was kind of like you. I just kind of stumbled into it.
Yeah.
And my father never persuaded me or pushed me to preach. Mm-hmm. In fact, he didn't want me to preach. Mm. But, you know, just by watching him and his ethic, his character, and how he prepares, like you said,
yeah,
I think you really pick up on that, and it translates into whatever you do. And I think you really, really got that ethic from him.
Let me tell you, my father, his work ethic. See, I work in comedy just as hard as he's worked his whole life. So he never wanted sorry children. Mm-hmm. Let's say that. He never wanted sorry children. I don't think he wanted a comedian, but he didn't want me to be sorry. And because I work hard at what I do, he accepts it because his son ain't sorry.
Right.
Right.
That makes, you know, so did I pick it up from him, the work ethic? Absolutely. And so he can appreciate it as a man, me following my dream, me working hard at it. And because I do that, my father helps me.
Mm-hmm. Well, you brought up the Festival of Praise tour.
Mm-hmm.
And when I heard that you were on that ticket, that was around about the time we were planning to start this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And
you brought my mama.
I did. I brought your mama to the show. And I asked you that night if you would mind being on the show. But that's what prompted me to, or one of the things that prompted me to do this podcast, is to really talk to people who are doing their passion, pursuing their dreams, but not necessarily in the confines of what's traditional church, or mm-hmm. even in the traditions of church.
Mm-hmm.
And by no means are you a quote-unquote Christian comedian.
Right.
You're a comedian who is a Christian.
Absolutely.
And so...
or a Christian who is a comedian.
Right, exactly.
I'm Christian first.
Right, exactly.
Comedian second.
Absolutely. And, you know, there's been a lot of talk, especially here in town,
mm-hmm.
Because of the venues that you play in,
mm-hmm.
that aren't always conducive to the saints.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been, and I've been guilty of saying it, and I've said it to you, bro, mm-hmm. I can't go there,
mm-hmm.
to hear you. I had to go all the way to Dallas,
yeah.
to catch your show,
right?
Because I'm not able as a pastor preacher, mm-hmm. to be seen
down there.
At the club, exactly.
And I've had a couple show up.
Right, and I mean, no judgment at all.
I know, but see, that, you know, when people see them there, it is, look, is he ordering something to drink?
Mm-hmm.
They're always,
yeah.
So,
can't
you
focus
know,
on the show.
Can't focus on the show because, right. You see a preacher supporting a friend.
Exactly.
And I mean, I've had them support.
Well, with that being said, how do you think what you do is important to the kingdom of God? What the work that you put in, the places that you go, the things that you say, the people in the lives that you touch,
mm-hmm.
how do you think that's helping to advance the kingdom of God?
Well, I'll tell you like this. David, see, you'd be taking me back to the... David played the harp for Saul, did he not?
Exactly.
Helped to soothe his soul.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I do. Laughter is good for the soul. It's like chicken soup for the soul.
Yeah.
And so... I believe even in cussing when I'm on stage, because I do. I was in Oakland at Tommy T's Comedy Club. There was a pastor that was in there. Didn't know he was a pastor. Had no clue. As a matter of fact, my cousin, who's a pastor, came to see me, but there was another pastor in there. Man, now I just finished doing my show, my regular comedy show, where Derek talked like Derek talked. And that man walked up to me and said, "Hey, I can tell you're a Christian. Do you do churches?"
Huh.
So even God's anointing, it doesn't leave you just because you are, you know, or you say or you do certain things. It's there, mm-hmm. and people can see it. And so that's just my way to reach them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they won't see me in a club drunk.
Mm-hmm.
Just won't see me in there drunk. You know, I'm still going to be me, but then I can invite you to church. So I think I'm helping advance the kingdom by showing... Man, listen, you still go out and have a good time, That doesn't damn you to hell, like most people would love to do. If people had a hell to put me in, I'd have been there a long time ago. But I just think that the way that I carry myself still allows people to say, you know what, he's still a Christian. He's still a Christian. It is what it is.
Do you find it difficult to deal with some of the people who can't differentiate the two? Because you can play a church. Mm-hmm. You can play the Festival of Praise tour with Fred Hammond and Bishop Hayes. Mm-hmm. And you can play, you know, the club down in the country. Mm-hmm. The hole in the wall.
I'm going to tell you what irritates me about church people. It's very irritating. I mean, extremely, extremely irritating. And I'm glad you said this, because there's a saying that they go blank and feed them fish. That's how I feel. Now, you see, I just left it right there, blank and feed them fish. That's me. Yeah. On that. But what bothers me is how narrow-minded people that are in positions of power or leadership at church are. Mm-hmm. How narrow-minded they are. When I say they're narrow-minded, Steve Harvey did Megafest.
Right.
That's where he did Don't Trip, He Ain't Through With Me Yet. Mm-hmm. They hired Earthquake to do the Festival of Praise. Earthquake. We're not talking about gospel comedians. Nowhere close to it. Do you hear me?
Right.
So we've seen these guys cuss up a storm around this country. Mm. All Steve said was, my mama made us go to church. That's all he ever said. He never said, I'm a gospel comedian. So here's what bothers me about these churches. Those guys, and even 2 years ago, I hosted a fashion show at Megafest. I watched comedians like Lavelle Crawford, funny, ain't no gospel comedian. Mm-hmm. Tony Roberts, funny.
Yeah.
He darn sure ain't no gospel comedian.
For real.
Robert Powell, who is the next big thing. Robert, only thing Robert ever told me in private was, I love God. But everything else is F this. So now, they hired them to do Megafest. That's what they hired them to do. Mm-hmm. Nephew Tommy's doing Megafest this year. I'm writing for him. And he's the one doing it. But a church will call me, knowing that my father's a pastor, that I've toured with David and Tamela Mann, I've done many, I hosted the Festival of Praise tour. They'll call and say, do you have any footage that we can see of you doing clean comedy? We need to know that you can do it. Bothers the crap out of me. Because I'm a professional. And even if I just worked at McDonald's and I cussed all day long, I know not to go to church and do it.
Right.
I'm a professional comedian. Because what makes me upset about church people is how they'll treat me because my name don't carry the same weight as all the other guys. That's about the only thing that bothers me. Because other than that, it's blank and feed them fish. See, y'all laughing because you know what the blank is. Yeah, exactly. And that's just how I feel.
Right.
You know, because I don't judge people. And I think they spend a lot of time judging and as if though they don't see it.
Right.
They spend a lot of time judging. Lots of time.
And even more irritating than that, they can quote all of the original Kings of Comedy.
Right. Exactly.
They know it word for word. They know Bernie's whole set.
Mary B. Kaysen. God rest her soul, my Aunt Mary B. I was getting my first show here in Texarkana. I was getting ready to do it, and she and I were riding. She's my great aunt. We were riding around Central Mall. Why? I don't remember. But she was in the car with me. And she said, baby, you nervous about tonight? I said, yes, ma'am. I said, because, you know, I know that my mom and them don't want me to cuss. And she said, what? I said, yeah, Annie. I said, everybody knows me as a preacher's kid, and I don't think they know what I do when I'm out of town. She said, baby, them people watch that at home. She said, they watch it at home. Now, they can act like they don't, but why you think it's popular? Mm-hmm. You go out there and you do exactly what you need to do. You say what you need to say. And if they don't like it, blank. And feed them fish. That's what she told me. And that stuck with me, and I stayed true to myself.
Right.
So.
And that's more important than putting on the persona
right.
for church folks. That's what a hypocrite does. Mm-hmm. They put on the persona for people to give them whatever accolades or whatever comes along with that. Mm-hmm. And when you don't have to put on that face, but you can still testify of the goodness of God and how much you love him and how much you serve him,
yeah,
and even say that you're not perfect and mm-hmm. show that you're not perfect, mm-hmm. People don't really know how to handle that.
They don't.
And yeah. I think that's where I said one day on Facebook, I think I might be one of the lost Christians, because I thought that Christianity was me helping you get through whatever you, even if that means that you're getting on stage making me laugh, if that's helping me get through whatever I'm going through, mm-hmm. isn't that the point? Like, mm-hmm. I don't think the point of it is for you to pass how you feel about what I'm going through mm-hmm. on to me. I know what I'm going through, but I think it's more or less how we helping each other get through what we're going through. And I think that's yeah. where we lose sight of what our jobs are here on earth. Yeah. We fall into the place of, well, I need to be telling you how wrong it is. Or I need to be telling you how pitiful that is. Mm-hmm. But in reality, no, you need to just be loving and praying for me, holding me accountable.
Absolutely.
You can hold yeah. me accountable without condemning me to hell.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, and that's where I have a problem with church people. Mm-hmm. You know that wasn't my question, but I just had to put that in there. I find that church people are more judgmental than the world. And even as a person, my personal testimony, I said, I might as well stay out here with them. At mm-hmm. least I know they love me more or less than when I go to church. And I feel like I got to lie. Is she looking at how low my shirt? And of course, you know, I was raised in the church. My grandmother, you know, mm-hmm. took us to church with no low cut shirts and all that stuff. But of course, now sometimes when I go, I'm like uncomfortable, you know. I can't focus on getting what I need because I'm worried about who's looking, who's going to say something, who's going to, you know. I think if we focus more on the reason why we do what we do, we would save a lot more souls. We'll win a lot more souls.
Now, what you said is about you may as well be out here with them because at least you know they love you. Mm-hmm. This is why on Sundays I don't wear suits. I refuse. I would wear this to church, mm-hmm. which is sweats and a t-shirt. If I go to a bar and somebody sees me looking down, they'll buy me a beer, slide it down and say, take one. I know what you're going through. Mm-hmm. You go to church and you look different than any, or you look like the sin. Won't nobody come up to you and say, I know what you're going through. Wow. Here's a hug. Mm-hmm. That's why people stay in the world based on how church people treat you. Mm-hmm. I don't believe in treating people that way.
I think it was just because I was brought up in the church. That's why I done stayed in the church mm-hmm. as long, because that was how Woo. I was grounded. My grandmother, yeah. you didn't have a choice.
Yeah.
You gonna either go to church or you gonna go to church.
But yeah. Or you gonna go to church. Those are the two choices.
Only two options, you know. And yeah. I watched my grandmother get on her knees tirelessly and pray for people. And so that's how I was raised. I watched her love people that wasn't blood. I have cousins. I'm like, you're not really my cousin. Because my grandmother, that's how she loved people. Right. And that's how I am. And so I'm just like, I don't care what you did yesterday. How are you today?
Yeah.
You know, and that's what I struggle with as a Christian, I guess.
Yeah.
Now, because
that's a powerful thing you said, though, because you said, and correct me if I'm wrong, but this is what I heard, that if I wasn't brought up in church, I might have would have given it up.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, mm-hmm. absolutely. I used to be scared to say that. I can firmly say to you right now that if I was not brought up in church, I would probably go and leave.
Mm-hmm.
I would not participate in a lot of the things that I participate in. I wouldn't be as active and as devoted. But I had to understand that what I do is not for the people. I do what I do because I love God. That don't mean I don't mess up. That doesn't mean I don't sin. That doesn't mean that I don't fall short. That just means that my love for Christ has supersedes mm-hmm. what other people think. But it hadn't always been like that. Right. Because there was a time when I said, I'm not going to church. Why? You know, I don't know how to fake and shake with people. Y'all don't really care nothing about me.
Right.
You know, and even when I was pregnant with my son, I wasn't married. You know, I didn't have a husband on my arm, but I was pregnant. I felt so judged. Not just, you know, not just saying at my home church. I'm just saying by people.
Right. But
period.
I think that's a lot of women. Because, see, and it's shaming. Mm-hmm. It's shaming a woman because the man ain't getting pregnant.
Mm-mm.
So he ain't got to walk around with the shame that people put on them.
Mm-hmm.
We had a young lady at our church, same thing. Wonderful woman. Now, later on, she ended up marrying the guy that got, I mean, like, we talking 5, 6 years. 6 years later, she married. You know, yeah, yeah, no, no, we ain't talking about you. But she ended up but she got out of church, mm-hmm. left the choir, based on how people made her feel. Mm-hmm. And it's sad.
And it's more so sad because church is where you're supposed to go.
It's for
now,
the
I'm already
sick.
Dealing with it, you know, because I wasn't raised like that. You know what I mean? And I'm not saying that my family was perfect, but you know, it's a certain standard that you were raised in. And so I felt like an outcast because I'm like, oh, Lord, you know. And then I had to think about, you know, people really don't realize what they say when you're going through a storm.
Oh, you
they,
know,
they don't realize how their words affect you, even though you might be just saying it casually. Or I remember I was in Walmart. And, you know, I was 7 months pregnant. So if I'm looking sad, I probably just got through throwing up.
Yeah. You
know,
yeah, yeah.
I might
yeah.
be hungry. You know.
Anything.
My thighs ain't never been friends. And now all of a sudden.
And now all of a sudden.
You know, I might be upset.
Right,
and so. You're
scared.
Yeah.
This always lady stopped me in the store and she was like, it's going to be all right. It's going to be all right. You know, she assumed that my struggle was because of my situation. And I looked at her like, child, I'm hungry. I ate today.
Yeah.
You know, and so it bothered me because I'm like, why are y'all so worried about this? This is my child, you know. And I don't think that church people realize that we look to, and I'll say this too, I find a lot of times, especially here in a small town, I want to say this right. I want to be politically correct, but
I feel like
here in a small town, it's so much other stuff that we could focus on, but we focus on other people's struggle.
Yeah.
And then I'll be looking sometimes like, wait a minute, you know, like you got all this going on and you're on Facebook worried about what this person got going on,
right.
You know, and that's where I have, and it be church people.
Right.
And I just be like, wow, you know, but as I've gotten older and I have matured in my, you know, Christian walk, because this it was a job, because I was like, I'm going to run up out of here. I'm not cut for I'm not fit for the kingdom.
Well, I got two things to add to what you said. Now, a few weeks ago, I put up a picture of myself on Instagram and Facebook, and it wasn't even of me, but I said this is the last photo that I took of myself, and it was a horse who had blinders on.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we got to be like them horses. Listen. I got to run my race.
That's right.
I can't worry about everybody else. Now, about leaving the church, because I've thought about it too. And me and Pastor Paul Keene have talked about it. This is his analogy on wanting to leave the church. Noah built the ark. And they had two of all types of animals on that ark. Now, what animal would you say is the funkiest?
Oof.
A funky animal.
All of them.
Horse, all of them.
A horse, all and pig. Son, you said a pig. They all got the mess, right?
Right.
Now, he on this ark closed in because the flood is here.
Right.
Now, we not out. That ark probably funky. It ain't no trap door to throw the boo-boo out of there. And how you going in there with the lions and the tigers and the... Oh, now, there's two of each animal.
Right.
They got the boo-boo. Yeah. And animals stink, period, anyway.
All of them.
So it's funky. You'd rather be in the ark of safety with that stench than out there in the world.
How do you... I notice a lot of comedians normally make people laugh.
Mm-hmm.
But behind closed doors, they... battle with keeping themselves in that place. And so I just would like to know.
Get deep then, Wick, because you done took me there. Go ahead.
Well, I just would like, because I remember seeing a piece on Robin Williams.
Okay.
And I just thought it was even Steve Harvey. And most comedians, you know, when they give their biographies and stuff, they talk about their life. They dealt with depression and all that stuff. And I just wonder, like, as a comedian, for you, what does that, is that like therapy? For you,
mm-hmm.
you know, like...
It is. It's very therapeutic. I get more out of it than I think the audience does. I've learned to laugh at myself. I've learned to laugh through problems. Kevin Hart just wrote a book. It's his autobiography. And he was talking about it's all about how you choose to deal with it. It really is. How you, he could have... He could. It's your perception. How you view it. He could have viewed his life as, you know, my parents, they got together, they had me, and it was terrible. The family was poor, or this, you know, we didn't have things anymore, and my dad left us. Or I could view it as, man, my parents loved each other enough to create me, and even though we didn't have things, we had love. It's about his perception. And so I struggle with depression. I struggled with it really bad. I did not know that I struggled with it until about 2 or 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. And when I brought Michael Collier down here, that was the first time I was really in it. I was really in depression. And two friends of mine came out of the house, and we were talking about the show, and they were kind of fussing because things weren't going the right way. And I was just sitting there crying. Why are you crying? Just crying. Now, I believe that there have been times where I wanted to take my own life. Mm-hmm. I've had those moments. And I've had times where, you know, I've called. I even talked about on stage. I called the suicide hotline. Mm-hmm. And when I called the suicide hotline, the lady put me on hold for 18 minutes. Now, when she put me on hold for 18 minutes... I forgot why I was mad at me. So now I'm mad at her. Right. And you know, I'm sitting on the phone, and you know, I say it on stage. She goes, "Thanks for calling Suicide Hotline. How can I help you?" I was like, "Hey, you put me on hold for 18 minutes." And she was like, "So you ain't kill yourself?" I was like, "Where's your supervisor?" She said, "Where your gun?" I said, "You know what? This is not but I didn't want to hurt me no more."
Right.
Now, truthfully, that night after that happened, I hung up. I was so mad at her. I got on the phone with her. I was driving down I-30. I just left Bible study. My parents saw that something was wrong with me. Mm-hmm. I drove up to Sonic. I didn't want anything to eat. I just drove out the parking lot. I did 30. And I got on 30. And I was only doing 30 miles per hour. The whole time I'm driving, I'm thinking, do you just flip the car? Do you hit another car? Do you hit a beam? What do you do? Do you speed and just close your eyes? What do you do? How do you take yourself out of here? Mm-hmm. Right now? And I didn't. It was the depression. It had me. Mm-hmm. Depression, and it's a dark spirit. And my father told me that it's a dark spirit, and the only way to get rid of darkness is with light.
Light, yeah.
It's the only way to get rid of darkness. So the light, part of the light was just being around other people.
Yeah.
So it. Well, it's on you now.
But when
I got to.
When you are operating at that high energy of bringing laughter and joy to people, mm-hmm. that does put you in a pendulum. Mm-hmm. And I've talked about that as a preacher.
Hmm.
It happens to me.
I was going to say, yeah. I'm sure you can probably attest to that too.
It's the exact same way because you are bringing people up to a great place.
Mm-hmm.
And because you're bringing them there, whenever that pendulum swings back, it swings back further than they were.
Mm-hmm.
And so you get in a deeper place than any people could even really imagine. Yeah. That most pastors, even if they don't admit it, deal with depression.
Mm-hmm.
At some form, some way. You know, suicide rates for pastors was out the roof.
Oh, yeah.
Two years ago.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you can't make me believe that that's changed.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I think that spirit is still around. Mm-hmm. Because we're bringing people up to a high place, which causes us to swing back further than they ever were. So, I mean, I think some of the most darkest times or spirits rest on people that do those type of jobs.
I think any type of job where you're giving to somebody. Because I ask that question because I ain't a preacher and I ain't no comedian. But I feel like I am a person that I was put here to serve other people. Mm-hmm. And I know that sounds funny, like... But I feel like servantship is what I was called to do, helping other people. That's where I, mm-hmm. but I've also dealt with depression. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know that I was depressed.
You don't know.
I didn't know. Yeah.
You don't know. In the beginning.
You don't. Mm-hmm. You just think, okay, I'm kind of, you know.
Yeah, I'm just down today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then, like, okay, I'm down today too. Well, when I figured it out was when things that I know I like to do didn't become, they weren't fun no more. Mm-hmm. Or, like you said, crying for no reason. My boss. One day, you know how when you are a person that's used to operating in a mode of excellence. It's not that I think I do everything right, but I'm pretty good in my job.
I understand.
You know?
Yeah.
And I'm not really, I can take constructive criticism without feeling like, you know, you mm-hmm. talking bad to me. Mm-hmm. But this particular day, all he said to me was, I need you to make me 50 copies of this and give me 20 copies of this. Well, I just simply flipped and I made 50 of this and 20 of this. And he was like, no, I said I needed you to do this. I broke down.
Mm, really?
And he was, and I didn't, not in front of him, but you know, at that moment I was like, okay, something's wrong. You know, something isn't right. And I actually had to go and talk to a, I went and talked to a therapist because I was like, I can talk to my mama, but she gonna talk to me like my mama.
Mm-hmm.
I can talk to my sister. She gonna talk to me like my sister. I can talk to my brother-in-law. He gonna pray for me. I don't feel like praying.
Yeah.
At that
it
moment,
ain't that easy.
It's not. No. And I didn't want to hear about you praying for me. I didn't want you to give me no Bible scripture. Don't talk to me about how good God is right now. And I know that sounds, but no, at no, that
but
moment, I didn't want to hear that. And so I needed to go talk to somebody. Like you said, you called the suicide hotline. Sometimes you need to talk to somebody that don't know nothing about
that's
you.
What I, that was my attempt that night. I didn't want anybody that... That's exactly how I felt. I didn't want to talk to somebody that I knew because then they'll think I'm seeking attention. I wasn't seeking attention, man. Something was wrong.
Something was wrong.
Something was wrong.
And so I feel like when you give and you pour out to other people, you know, it's depressing, but at the same time, it's where you also find the joy again. So I just wondered, you know, being in a position where you're on a platform, how do you deal with, you know, your emotions?
And if I could just add to that, does... When it comes to dealing with your depression, does anxiety come into play with you?
Didn't know that it did until recently.
Okay.
Didn't know I had anxiety.
Okay.
I just found that out.
You normally don't know until you have your first panic attack.
And I was having them. Mm-hmm. I thought I was dying. Mm-hmm. Thought I was having a heart attack.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of my depression because I was trying so hard not to be depressed that I was, let me get out. I ain't finna get in this place anymore.
Mm-hmm.
These are dark places. I don't want to be in this dark. And then my neck was hurting.
Mm-hmm.
My arm, I was like,
feel
man,
like an elephant standing like,
yeah, I'm having a heart attack. I go to the doctor, telling him, I drive myself to the emergency room, 2 o'clock in the morning. The only person I told was my brother David. I didn't want my parents to know that I was going, and I text him because he's in California. And I said, hey man, I'm going to the doctor. I think I'm having a heart attack, and I'm really thinking I'm done. Anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
Had no clue. But you know, I don't highlight all that stuff because I wasn't seeking attention. Let me
right,
say that.
Right.
And I think that's a misconception. Sometimes you see statuses on Facebook. People are looking for attention. And we do. I needed some attention, but I didn't want to ask.
That wasn't the attention that you were looking
that
for.
That ain't the attention I was looking for.
You were looking for help and didn't know how to, really to ask for.
I didn't, because I'd already asked for help before. Right. And I asked God, take this off of me, because I can't deal with this. I'll say this. I'm in a much better space today, and I understand what triggers my depression now.
Mm.
And because I understand the disease, I'm a lot better.
I remember one day I asked my friend, we came to one of the shows out at the Hole in the Wall, as Derek said. And I said to her, I said, you know, I wonder, you know, how it must feel to make people laugh all the time. I said, I wonder if Derek has ever, I asked her this question. And I said, you know, he's so funny, but I can only imagine the private demons that you deal with when you make everybody else laugh.
Right.
You know, how do you, when you go to sleep at night, are you really, and then you see all these comedians, all these pastors, all these people in the public eye. And I'm just like, you know, they have to deal with something, you know? And so I just wonder, and then people think because you're brought up in a church that depression is like a demon.
Mm-hmm.
And they just want to pray it out of you.
Yeah.
And they don't understand it's an illness. It's a sickness.
Yeah,
and you really gotta get help.
And it could be physiological, it could be mental. There's so many different factors that can play onto it that, you know, we are oftentimes praying the wrong prayer.
Yeah,
and don't know how to really deal with people or even deal with ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll place judgment on others when we're actually quietly dealing with it ourselves at home.
Instead of
we don't know how to.
And I was scared to tell anybody that I was dealing with it because I'm like, I don't want to look weak.
Right.
I don't want people to think I'm weak because I don't know how to deal with my emotions. I had to go all the way back to figure out where did this start, you know, and learn how to deal with all of that again because I never dealt with it. I just was taking it. You know, when you start carrying this bag and filling it up with mess, it's going to eventually get too heavy. Yeah.
And I wanted to figure out where mine started at.
Mm-hmm.
So I called my ex-wife and asked her, I said, hey, well, I told her one day, I said, if I don't, you know, pick up or I don't want to talk to my son right now, just know I'm dealing with depression, And so I said, did I ever deal with depression? She said, well, no. She told me, well, you used to deal with depression. And I said, what do you mean? She said, you used to be depressed, but you didn't want to talk about it. Mm. I tried to get you to talk. I don't even remember that.
Right.
I don't have a clue where it started. I just know after I wasn't around my child, mm-hmm. that it became worse.
Right.
Because of a decision I made to get divorced, you know, it triggered this depression. Mm-hmm. Because I felt like maybe I'm doing something wrong. I remember that's whenever it really started hitting me. Maybe I did something wrong. I don't want to, you know, not be his daddy.
Right.
I want to be my son's daddy, but I'm not there. And so each time something failed, it's another thing. Yeah. It just something else failed. Just more depression. I got a no on this. Can't get no yeses out here in this life.
Right.
Another no. So I try to stay away from that. I try to give as many yeses. Which is why I produce my own shows. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people will tell you no, so you have to. God can tell you yes, but it's like, man, I gotta create this. Own. I had to.
And you gotta find that self confidence too, because where I dealt with, I can agree with you on there. Mm-hmm. Failure will make you feel like a failure. You know, people keep telling you no to this. You'll start feeling like, what's wrong with me?
So my father owns a newspaper, the TCJ. Mm-hmm. He wants me to be a salesman for him. I can't. I've never been able to tell him that it would trigger my depression. Mm. With being a salesman,
yeah.
And hearing all
no.
These
no's. Yeah.
Especially something like that. You're going to hear more no's than yes.
Man, listen. I love him. I'll deliver his papers for him.
I can't sell them.
Brother, I can't sell because it will trigger. I know it sounds crazy.
No, I understand. Not what you're saying.
It will trigger my depression. It'll trigger. I just can't do it.
And I realized that but when you have that, what I had to figure out was you gotta like you. You have to like you, because if you don't like you, when Derek don't like you, it won't matter because you mm-hmm, like you. Mm-hmm. And that I didn't like me at all, and it didn't have anything to do with physical appearance. It didn't have anything to do with, you know, anything other than I just didn't like who I was at the
time.
It's
funny you say that. Have you ever heard Kirk Franklin's song "I Like Me"?
Mm-mm.
You heard it? It starts off short, big nose, big lips. Got us just a stutter, but I never ever trip. And it's like, he's like, I like me. Yeah. Do you like me? God likes me. Because I like, and it's just talking about liking itself.
And that's what I have to figure out, because I used to worry about like, okay, is this going to be enough? Because I was raised that when you do something, I don't care what it is, you put your best foot forward. You do, and you gotta be the best at it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Woo.
And if you're not the best at it, it don't matter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're not in the top 10% of your class, what are you going to school for? That was kind of what I don't think that's what they meant.
No, that's but not that what they was meant, the kind of
the feeling I got feel was like, man, you gotta be the best at everything. And so everything I did, I worked so hard to be the best at it, but I never really enjoyed what right. I was doing. Even in school, I worked so hard to make straight A's, but I really wasn't learning the material. I was just learning it enough to get straight A's. Right. And so, you know, as an adult, I had to look around and say, what have I been doing all this time, you know? And so the first time that I failed at something, it took me down.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about
that failure.
It took me all the way out, like to where I was just in the bed, don't want to comb my hair, don't want to do nothing. And I had to realize that if you don't have the confidence in yourself, and I really had to have confidence, I had to really find God in it, because depression, and I will take it back to the church, we don't understand the depression. We don't understand it. We don't understand that it's people.
Don't even take it to the church. Take it to our community.
Oh, mm-hmm. Black folk.
Now, take it right there.
Yeah.
Because that's a white man's disease.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you weak.
You weak.
We have always had to be strong in all of our community. So you mentioned depression or any sort of mental illness. No, you can't be crazy.
You're crazy. And then, you know, you take it as, I know it's hard for black men as well, but when you're a black woman, you have to prove, I work in an office with all men. Mm-hmm. So you have to prove that I'm just as good as him,
mm-hmm.
even though I'm a female, mm-hmm. even though I'm the youngest person in this office. as a black mother, I have to prove to the world that just because I have a son and I'm a single mother, that doesn't mean that I can't accomplish the same thing you're accomplishing. You know, everything that we do, we have to, like, fight.
Right.
And so it becomes tiring. In the community, we don't support each other.
Mm-hmm.
We don't help each other.
Mm-hmm.
And then I say the church, but it is the community. We don't love each other enough.
Right.
I think if we loved each other a little bit more, we would see the depression rates going down a whole lot.
Yes.
Absolutely.
If we understood the disease and the cause of it, and if we understood that what we say matters, and you don't know what a person, who would think Derek Keener would be dealing with depression? Right. Enjoy the interview as much as we did. Had an awesome time interviewing Derek today. Got a lot of good insight.
Yeah, I really thoroughly enjoyed everything that he had to say. We're going to end every show just like you do at church, and we're going to open the doors of the church for those who need to come down and repent. And we're going to let Whitley make an appeal for somebody who needs to come and sit in the chair at the front of the church.
Well, the first one that I would like to talk about is, you know how you go to a barbecue and they add, you know, we look at all the food that's on the table and we ask, who makes the potato salad?
You know black folks are serious about their potato salad.
Yes, and I'm one of those black folks. If it's got too much red or too much yellow, you know, I'm not going to eat it. It's got to be balanced. The red and the yellow got to be.
What is the red anyway?
Pimentos.
Oh, see, that's
good. My grandmother used to make it, and her potato salad was well balanced.
Yeah.
It wasn't too yellow, it wasn't too white. It was just enough red, just enough green for me to eat it. And sometimes it just don't be looking like potato salad.
So, everybody making the potato salad wrong, you need to come down to the altar right now. And, you know, we're just coming out of the 4th of July weekend and the celebrations last week. And so in the same vein, I want to call down all of you who bring absolutely nothing to the cookout, but yet take away 5 plates. Who does that? Who does that? Y'all do that at church. Y'all do that at the family reunion. You do it at the neighborhood cookout. You ain't bring nothing, but you take away 5 plates.
Mm-hmm.
What's wrong with y'all? Y'all need to be saved. You need to be delivered and set free.
Amen. Church Folks and Kingdom Culture are the intellectual properties of Derek J. Murphy and Derek J. Murphy Enterprises, and it is produced by Derek J. Murphy and Whitley Watson, assisted by Adrian Brown, and our intern Tyler Hollowell. Music provided by Chuck Price.
Make sure to visit us on the web at derekjmurphy.com/churchfolks. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram at Church Folks Show. You can also follow Whit on Facebook as Whit Rose and on Instagram as @me_WhitLove. You can also follow me. I am Derek J. Murphy everywhere but Snapchat because I don't do that.
Make sure to tell a friend about the show and spread our little good news. And while you're at it, go ahead and subscribe on iTunes, Google Music, and SoundCloud and give us a 5-star rating. It really does help.
So until next week, may the Lord watch between me and thee.
What did you do this Sunday that you haven't done before? You sang what? Huh? You forgot? Did you sing in the choir?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I got to train him up the way, you know, my parents raised me. You don't remember what song you sung? Okay. All right.
But he know he sung.
He know he sung. I just need to ask you one more question. Who's funnier, Daddy or Kevin Hart?
Daddy.
Absolutely right.
He's going to go to McDonald's tonight, Jack. You doggone right. He know what it is. He'll fight you behind his dad.
Perhaps he sings What's Next.
Hilarious. Well, I heard it was terrible.
It was awful.
Kevin Hart is a butthead.
Okay, all right then.
And I will put that on air.
Dad is still trying to work. Chill out.
And for our on-demand listeners, here's a little bit more for you to enjoy of Derek Keener.
All right, I have one last question.
there is a rise of the social media comedian, the YouTube and Instagram and the Facebook comedians.
All right.
How do you feel about this new wave of comedy? And you've done a few skits, and they are funny, by the way. But how do you see yourself in that world, or if at all, and how do you think this will play out over time?
Well, that's a tricky question. It's a good question. This is a tricky question. So, I don't like the internet comedian. Mm-hmm. I don't have anything against them, but I don't like them. Mm-hmm. When I grew up in comedy, I was trying to be on Def Comedy Jam. I wanted to be on Comic View. Mm-hmm. That's what I was chasing. And so in 2008, I believe, was the last year that they did a taping of Def Comedy Jam. And I was actually there. D.L. Hughley hosted it. Mm-hmm. It was in Los Angeles at the Orpheum Theater. And I had just gotten to a point where I was getting funny enough to possibly be booked on TV. Mm-hmm. And I'm ready. Well, they didn't bring it back. They just stopped. There was no more Comic View. There was no more Def Jam. And I'm sitting here going...
Especially for black comedians.
Yeah, somebody's going to bring it back. They'll bring it back. I'll be able to get on there. Well, while I'm sitting here waiting on the door to open back up at this place that says it's closed, there are some other people that are behind me that aren't as funny that are using a new platform called the internet.
So, Daddy, what are you talking about?
Internet comedians, people that are on the internet. So these guys were using their platform, and they were doing comedy, I guess you can say, on the internet. Now, here's the difference. Comedians that do upload videos, little funny skits and whatnot, you can edit. Mm-hmm. You can stop, start over. Nobody knows that it took you 80 times to get it perfect like that.
So, Daddy, tell them how many fights you have when you were
there. Okay, I'm going to tell them in just a minute. Probably about
can
you seven.
Tell them all of the fights?
Yeah, I'll tell them about it in just a minute. But so, my little interviewer said, so, Daddy, tell them. Yeah, so, the internet comedian, they should call it something else because they're not comedians. They're internet personalities.
Okay.
And what they're doing is they're entering into a world of comedy when they're not comedians. They're just not comedians.
Right.
But they get booked.
Yeah.
They get booked.
Yeah.
And they're making money
based
on what they've done on the internet. Now, when you put a real comedian like myself in front of them, they don't do that well because they can't go back and edit.
Mm-hmm.
So now, while I like Country Wayne, I like his videos. I think his videos are funny. I perform with him twice. And I'm only saying his name because we're talking about internet comedians and he's successful. I'll say this here, and I'm not talking to man's money or his price. I've never been paid what that man has been paid on stage.
Wow.
Never. Not even close. But he's just not stand-up comedy funny.
No.
He's just not. So I don't knock the guy's hustle, but they should call them something else because they're not comedians. But then they come and do stand-up comedy as if though they are comedians, and it looks bad, and it's bad for the art.
And I see that.
Mm-hmm.
I see that there's several.
You see the difference in the quality.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have the stage presence.
They don't.
They don't have the ability to write a joke.
Mm-hmm.
The timing, the punchlining, and all the stuff that goes into the art.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have it. They just may be naturally funny. They may have a good eye for something, or they catch a good topic.
Mm-hmm. They're not good at impromptu.
No,
not at all.
Yeah,
I watched Country Wayne this weekend. I was trying to figure out what was it. He just leaves jokes hanging. It's so funny. You're right there, and you're like, ah, dang, he didn't close it.
Mm-hmm.
Now the next one, he didn't close it. So he does, like you said, he doesn't know how to write a joke. Now, I've never written a joke. I always talk about my life. I tell the truth.
Right.
Whatever I'm dealing with, that's what I talk about. That's how I do. But these internet guys, man, they...
Well, I mean, even if you don't write joke, you do understand the timing.
I sure do.
You understand how to stick a punchline.
I sure do.
And because of that, even if you're not telling a quote-unquote joke, that's the way it comes off.
Mm-hmm.
And people won't even know. Because I've heard you tell that suicide hotline story. And I just thought it was a bit.
Joke.
Yeah.
It's the truth.
But because you know how to tell the story, you know how to stick the punchline, you make it feel better than it actually is.
Mm-hmm.
And then they really don't have that.
They don't know the difference. Yeah, those guys are, they're good for what they do. What's his name? Bring that here, boy. Him.
DC Young Fly.
Man, major movies.
Yeah.
Major movie, you know, and you're Wildin' Out. That's a lot of those guys. They get on
those TV
shows.
Killing it on Wildin' Out.
Man, listen, they're killing it on there. It's a skit thing.
It's a skit.
Can you do, and that's fine. Stay in your lane.
Exactly.
But these guys are coming over to comedy and getting buku dollars.
So my dad, one time in the neighborhood, he was walking to school, and then his cousin...
He said he ain't gonna let this fight go.
And then his cousin had shot him in the leg.
Wow.
But I'm fine.
Switching gears here.
I never showed it to you, Caleb. Right? It's right here.
You don't forget nothing, do you, Caleb?
No, you don't forget.
He
okay.
said, we doing an interview. They need to know my daddy got shot.
Yeah, and my daddy got street cred. My daddy got street cred.
Not only is he funny.
Yeah, but he got street cred, son.
But he real out here in these streets.
So, I mean, the internet guys, man, I don't have a problem with them. I say more, I want to see you be successful. I wish that those people who are patrons would understand that those guys are not comedians, and that's not stand-up comedy, what they're giving you. Right. It's a very watered-down version. You like them because you've seen their videos. And by all means, support these guys. Right. But there are real comedians out here that could really make you laugh with the art of stand-up comedy. So,
and they need the platform just as much as these guys. Not just for the sake of getting a few dollars one night.
Mm-hmm.
But having the sustainability to bring that guy back.
Absolutely.
And make money every night.
Absolutely.
They come.
Absolutely.
And I think it's consistency, too, because I watched a video somebody posted on Facebook of Bernie Mac way back in the day. I don't even think I was... Bro had patches on his pants. So I know I wasn't born. I was real little.
He's my favorite comedian.
Is he? Well, I saw a video of him in... it was the one where he was talking about, I ain't scared of none of y'all. Still,
yeah, that's right.
Still funny. Uh-huh. Like Bernie Mac is funny to me. He was funny, but the quality of his jokes were still funny even up until the day that he died. Mm-hmm. And so you look at these new and upcoming internet comics, and it's one topic. Mm-hmm. You know, you give them a topic. Normally, their videos are one topic. It's funny, but it's like, what's next? You know, it's like Bernie Mac is gonna consistently give you a laugh.
Derek, he took real life situations.
Exactly. It was authentic. Whereas these guys dressing up, now they funny now.
Yeah.
Like Charlene.
Yeah.
Funny.
Yeah.
But it's like, what do you have? You don't have anything other than that. You're gonna always have to be Charlene. And we're gonna get tired of seeing
Talked to Charlene. Well, her name is Kristen A. Porter.
Yeah.
The Kristen Show. I did her logo. Talking to her. Yeah, I did her logo. I talked to her extensively, and I was like, so, you know, I was wanting to put a silhouette of Charlene on her logo.
Mm-hmm.
She said, absolutely not. There's more to my act than Charlene.
Charlene just gets me noticed.
Mm-hmm. Charlene just gets her notice, and I think she is really trying to break out of that and really hone her craft as a stand-up comic.
David Mann is trying to do the same thing. He's trying to break out of being Brown.
Brown, right. And it's hard to do because that's what people want to see.
I can't see him being nobody but Mr. Sebastianese.
Tyler Perry.
That's my deal.
That's my deal.
I don't care about him being
in Ninja Turtles.
He my deal.
He my deal.
He put that lip
the damn deal. That's who he is. Yeah,
but you know, when you say Derek Keener, you can do that anyway you want to. It's kind of like a household name, like Bernie Mac, Steve Harvey, Cedric the Entertainer.
And that's why I've never wanted to really do the internet stuff, because you have to turn into some sort of character.
Yeah,
I don't want to be. You know, I started doing a character, and people were going, "Why don't you just keep doing that solo theme?" Well, I like it, and it is funny.
Yeah, it was funny.
Oh, man, when you get in that, you can't get out of it.
Right.
You can't get out of it. That's what they want. They don't want everything else you have.
And you
want
to be able to control that if you use it at all.
I dare sure do.
Yeah.
I dare sure do. So I'm not. I don't look at it for get some money now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't look at it like that. I want to make sure that when I do get the money, I can sustain and continue to get it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to just have money now and then never again.
Right.
I don't want to be able to just be Saul Osteen, the black version of Joel Osteen, and can't be Derek Keener. And that's all people want to see.
Right.
But do the voice.
And you can't even be billed as Derek Keener. You have to be billed as Derek Keener, a.k.a. Saul Osteen.
I don't want that.
You don't want that.
Yeah. And then you'll start losing the identity of who you started off as being.
And that's why most people have stage names. Like Jamie Foxx, that's not his real name.
I didn't
Eric
even
Bishop.
Know that.
Yeah, Eric Bishop.
Somebody posted that. I said, nah, your name's Jamie Foxx.
Right. He can't get out of it now.
He can't get out of it now.
Because either you're going to be Jamie Foxx or you're going to be Jamie King.
Shad Moss. Shad Moss. Bow Wow. He had to break it.
Yeah.
I'm Shad Moss. Ludacris is having to break it.
But Jamie Foxx had a legitimate reason. Because he was trying to be first up on the lineup.
That's right. And women.
Women's names
were hot at the time. Oh. So he changed his name to Jamie.
To a unisex name.
Yeah.
So here's what he did. It wasn't even Jamie first. It was always unisex.
Stacey. Yeah, it was unisex.
But Jamie Foxx ended up sticking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That just, that got him.
Tell that story.
Mm-hmm. If you know, I see him in the mall, he Jamie Foxx.
You know, we got a cousin.